a 14-year-old boy for a man to come along and say, hey, I care about you. And then the next thing you know, that child is now identifying as homosexual.
What is the gay agenda? What do they want? A new world order where there's absolutely no restriction on sexual practices. They don't care about you. They want the children.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The U.S. provides the inspiration for Ugandan persecution, rainbow Russian colors clash with homophobic thugs, and same-gender Brits married elsewhere get an early start on equality. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Johnny Torres.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 15, 2014. A lawsuit was filed on March 10th challenging Uganda's Anti-Homosexuality Act, which passed in Parliament in December and was signed into law by President Yoweri Museveni on February 24th. The law punishes consensual adult gay sex with up to life in prison, and both public advocacy for LGBT rights and people who fail to report suspected homosexuals to the authorities with up to 7 years behind bars. Plaintiffs include the Umbrella Civil Society Coalition on Human Rights and Constitutional Law and several prominent Ugandan LGBT rights activists, along with scholars, political commentators, a former opposition leader, and even Member of Parliament Fox Odoi, the only lawmaker to vote against the Anti-Homosexuality Act. The lawsuit asserts that the measure violates the Ugandan Constitution's guarantees of privacy rights, freedom from discrimination, and freedom of assembly, expression, and association.
While the constitutional challenge works its way through the courts in the East African nation, many of the same petitioners have filed a request for a permanent injunction with Uganda's High Court to stop the notorious Red Pepper tabloid and other media outlets from publishing the names and photos of alleged gays and lesbians. The same court declared those acts unlawful in 2010, but there's been an ugly resurgence since the Anti-Homosexuality Act became law, and widespread reports of increasingly violent attacks against people known to be or perceived to be gay. Activists say that several people have been evicted by their landlords in the last month, and that at least 10 suspected homosexuals have been arrested in Kampala alone.
In Nigeria, the oxymoronically named justice minister says that his country's similarly homophobic measure, known as the Jail All the Gays Law, was enacted to protect gay people from vigilante violence. Nigerian Justice Minister and Attorney General Mohamed Adoke claimed this week that the government had to step in with punitive measures so as to prevent citizens from taking laws into their own hands. The Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act not only outlaws civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples, but also bans any kind of advocacy by or on behalf of LGBT people and makes involvement in a same-gender couple's marriage ceremony a serious criminal offense. Before the new laws enhanced penalties and additional prohibitions, Nigeria already punished consensual adult gay sex with 14 years in prison. Those convicted of homosexuality in predominantly Muslim northern states can be executed under Sharia law.
Anti-gay laws are being considered elsewhere on the continent. A bill to criminalize gay and transsexual people has been introduced in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It has 37 different articles to outlaw LGBT people, and human rights activists in the Central African country fear that it's likely to go well beyond merely criminalizing gay sex to outlaw other forms of expression of sexual orientation and gender identity. Sources say it punishes consensual adult gay sex with up to 5 years in prison and transgender people with up to 12 years. The Democratic Republic of Congo, previously known as Zaire, is a former Belgian colony that gained independence in 1960. It has no inherited laws against homosexual acts because Belgium decriminalized gay sex in 1795.
The majority leader of Kenya's National Assembly wants to know why the East African country's 1930s-era law punishing homosexual acts with up to 14 years in prison is not being enforced. According to AllAfrica.com, Aidan Duale, prompted by a fellow MP, asked Kenya's Director of Public Prosecutions this week to explain the non-enforcement of anti-gay laws, whether there are any organizations that are championing violation of the aforementioned laws, and if they are registered, what steps are being taken by the government to deregister or curtail such organizations' activities.
Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, the Southern African nation's leading advocacy group, reported that leaders Natasha Dowell and Tawanda Maguzi were arrested this week at a hotel in Harare. They were conducting a media training course for about 20 people when police broke in. They charged Dowell under the Public Order and Security Act, which requires advance authorization for a public meeting. Maguzi was eventually released without charge. Police interrogated each of the training participants before they were allowed to leave. Zimbabwe's notoriously homophobic President Robert Mugabe has routinely compared gays and lesbians to dogs and pigs. The 90-year-old Mugabe told reporters earlier this month that, "I understand we have a group of homosexuals in this country. I didn't know until I was told the day before yesterday. So we want to check on who is in that group."
Homophobia also remains alive and well in Russia, home of the law against so-called gay propaganda, as strongman Vladimir Putin makes a grab for the Crimean Peninsula. Rainbow flag-carrying LGBT participants carrying placards denouncing sexism and homophobia were pelted with raw eggs at a March 8th International Women's Day march in Moscow. Arriving Russian police first demanded the removal of the rainbow flags, but then discovered that some of the egg-throwing anti-gay thugs were also armed with crowbars, knives, and machetes hidden under their clothes. They took more than a dozen of those thugs into custody.
In happier news for sexual minorities, effective at midnight on March 13th, lesbian and gay couples in the UK who legally married elsewhere were considered to be legally married at home. A quirk in marriage equality legislation passed in January allowed the early recognition. Same-gender couples in England and Wales who are not yet married will have to wait until March 29th to tie the knot. But the marriage equality law now allows them to formally declare their intent to marry. Gay and lesbian couples already in civil partnerships, however, will have to wait until later this year to have their unions converted to civil marriage.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced this week that health insurance providers offering coverage to heterosexual married couples must, beginning in 2015, offer the same coverage to legally married same-gender couples. The policy announcement was said to be based on last year's U.S. Supreme Court DOMA ruling. The new federal rules apply to all plans that meet the standards of the Affordable Care Act, regardless of where the couple legally married, and even if the state they live in doesn't sanction marriage equality. The Obama administration is encouraging insurers to begin following the new policy right away.
The United Methodist Church has dropped its prosecution of the former dean of Yale Divinity School, the Reverend Dr. Thomas Ogletree, who had faced punishment for officiating his son's wedding to another man. Bishop of New York Martin McLee announced at a press conference this week that he would now approach marriage equality as a theological and spiritual issue rather than a juridical problem. An accompanying press release notes that McLee's announcement is the first time ever a sitting United Methodist bishop has categorically declared he will not prosecute pastors for ministering to LGBTQ people. Reverend Ogletree said at the press conference that officiating the 2012 marriage of his son Thomas with Nicholas Haddad was an act of pastoral faithfulness and fatherly love. Son Thomas told the Associated Press how proud he was of his father.
Seeing my dad being able to bear public witness and take on this leadership role has really invigorated him. But I think that's been extraordinary. I think had it gone to trial, it would have been the scrutiny and the complexity of it may have been not so fun. But I think it's been a really great opportunity to see him engage with this and grow over it and really, as he said, be a public witness.
This week's announcement was somewhat unexpected. Methodist minister Frank Schaefer of Pennsylvania was defrocked in December for officiating his gay son's wedding. The United Methodist Church is the second largest Protestant denomination in the U.S., with 7.5 million members. According to its 2012 Book of Discipline, the United Methodist Church does not condone the practice of homosexuality and considers this practice incompatible with Christian teaching.
In this week's other U.S. marriage news, a federal judge in Tennessee ordered state officials to recognize the unions of three same-gender couples legally married in other states during the consideration of their lawsuit challenging Tennessee's ban on recognizing such marriages. U.S. District Court Judge Alita Trauger wrote that all relevant federal authority indicates that the plaintiffs in this case are indeed likely to prevail on their claims that the anti-recognition laws are unconstitutional. Meanwhile, Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear is paying $100,000 taxpayer dollars to a private law firm to appeal a federal court ruling overturning a similar ban in his state after Attorney General Jack Conway said he could not defend discrimination.
And finally, lawyers for four same-gender couples who legally married in Utah while a ban was briefly lifted urged a U.S. judge this week to force the conservative, heavily Mormon state to recognize their unions while the legal battle over marriage equality plays out in court. More than 1,300 lesbian and gay couples got hitched from late December until early January following a federal court ruling declaring the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples to be unconstitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court stopped the nuptials on January 6 while the state appeals. The latest lawsuits challenging state marriage bans were filed on the same day this week in Arizona, Florida, and Indiana. The filings on March 13th joined at least 50 others currently working their way through the legal system in various U.S. states.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 15th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and was produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
And I'm Johnny Torres.
Do you wish you could go back in time to encourage your younger self? Take a letter later in the program.
Oh, come along with me to my little corner of the world and dream a little dream in my little corner of the world.
Ever since pop singer and Florida orange juice huckster Anita Bryant vowed to save our children, a strain of Christian crusaders in the U.S. has been making homophobic hay off her fear-mongering pitch. Bryant launched a successful campaign in the late 1970s to repeal an ordinance in her state's Dade County that banned sexual orientation-based discrimination. She and her backers warned that non-procreating gays and lesbians had to recruit kids to replenish their numbers. It proved to be a winning strategy for several years. But as a new century dawned, the culture war over LGBT rights in the U.S. started to collapse. The misbegotten message about threats to the young, however, and pseudoscientific, pseudo-spiritual claims to cure homosexuality through therapy and prayer found fertile new ground in the East African nation of Uganda. Massachusetts Minister Scott Lively led the evangelical pack, making his first visit in 2002. He returned in 2009 as the proposal for Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill was first circulating. In lengthy presentations attended by parliament and cabinet members, Lively warned that Ugandan children were in jeopardy of being turned into homosexuals by predatory Westerners.
As many as 25% of young people in early adolescence have same-sex attraction of some kind. And here's the dirty little secret that the gay movement doesn't want you to know. The large majority of those people never do anything about it. If you catch them at 12 years old, which they're working very, very aggressively to do, and you tell those children that if you have an attraction towards someone of the same gender, that means you're gay. And that because you're gay, you need to come with us, because you can't go around regular society because they hate you. It's full of homophobes that want to hurt you. So you come with us where you're going to be safe. And suppose you're a little 12-year-old girl, and you are feeling an attraction toward other girls. Perfectly natural. It happens all the time. It goes away by the time you're older. But there's that time when, during that when both boys and girls will feel attraction to the other as they're starting to have puberty take place. But instead of it naturally going away as the girl discovers boys and has a normal life, all of a sudden there's another girl in the school and she comes and says, you know, come with me. And she ends up having an orgasm in a relationship with that girl. That automatically, immediately, is like a huge stamp. Boom, you're gay, right? You walk away thinking, I had pleasure in that. And so therefore, I must be gay. right? And then you then, from then forward, can self-identify as gay. And of course, there's a whole network of people ready to simply inculcate you and fold you into their world. Okay? You know, predatory gays, and there are a lot of, not everyone is, and I'm not, please don't misquote me, but there are a number of people that are very predatory. They're very sexually oriented, that want to satisfy their sexual desires. Often these are people that were molested themselves, and they're turning it around, and they're looking for other people to be able to prey upon. And that they, when they see a child that's from a broken home, it's like they have a flashing neon sign over their head. You know, my dad doesn't love me. Or, you know, I'm discouraged and full of fear about my future, whatever. That child is so vulnerable to a man, a 14-year-old boy, for a man to come along and say, you know, hey, I care about you, right? Now, and then the next thing you know, that child is now identifying as homosexual.
Lively, who's being prosecuted in U.S. federal court for violating the human rights of LGBT Ugandans, was brought back to the East African country later in 2009 by influential Assemblies of God pastor Stephen Langa for another barnstorming tour. He again met with lawmakers, appeared at universities and in the media, and co-hosted a day-long presentation for local pastors. Reverend Langa also leads Uganda's Family Life Network, which sponsored follow-up seminars. He parroted Lively's wacky rendition of LGBT movement history into his definition of the gay agenda.
In America, this gentleman, Henry Gerber, was a German-American soldier who served in Germany after the First World War. And then he went back to America and began activism, but in a very small way, in a very small way. And Henry Gerber molested a boy by the name Champ Simmons. When Champ Simmons grew up, he also molested a boy, Harry Hay. Then Harry Hay is the grandfather of modern gay movement in the 40s. He taught communism for 18 years, and during that time he learned how society can be taken over using economic means. But he just understood those tactics and taught the gay activists on how to overthrow the moral fiber of the Western world, which was based on marriage and the family. So he taught these guys tactics and strategies of how to overthrow a society. And so they began to do their work. What is the gay agenda? What do they want? What do they want? The first thing they want a creation of a utopia, a new world order where there's absolutely no restriction on sexual practices. Most of our cultures and most of our societies come from a culture where marriage and family are cherished and sex is restricted to within marriage. All of us, that's where we come from. Our cultures, even before the white man came, all our cultures, virtually, were like that. But these people, their goal is to overthrow that and have a world where you can do anything, can sleep with anything, with anyone, and with anything. That's what they want. They don't care about you. They want the children. That's what the gay want to do. That's what the gay want to do.
Save the children, save the children, save the children.
For the record, there's no evidence that German-American LGBT rights trailblazer Henry Gerber ever had inappropriate relations with children, or that pioneering modern-day movement leader Harry Hay was molested by the man whom Gerber never molested. Langa's seminar also heard from the Director of Research for Uganda's Parliament, Charles Tuhazy. He argued that the nation's colonial-era anti-homosexuality laws made it difficult to punish gay activists.
As my experience in Parliament, I have to say a bit about the legal status, standing about this issue in Uganda. Right now, there is only, I think, in the Penal Code, there is only one verse, in the Penal Code which says, it is illegal to have carnal knowledge against the order of nature. That law is extremely inefficient. It is ineffective. It was coined in the 1950s, and it is totally outdated. Because even in court, that law can be challenged. So what we think is necessary now is to draft a new law that comprehensively deals with the issue of homosexuality.
Uganda's so-called Kill the Gays bill, because it originally punished aggravated homosexuality with execution, was formally introduced in Parliament on October 14, 2009 by MP David Bahati, a man with enduring and intimate ties to leading U.S. Christian evangelical groups. It eventually passed almost unanimously in Parliament on December 20, 2013 and was signed into law by President Yoweri Museveni on February 24th of this year. With the death penalty reportedly removed, life in prison is now the maximum sentence. The Anti-Homosexuality Act also criminalizes advocating for LGBT rights and requires citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the police. But the battle's not over yet.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
A coalition of human rights organizations, LGBT activists, noted Ugandan scholars and commentators, and a few brave politicians filed a lawsuit this week challenging the constitutionality of the Anti-Homosexuality Act. While the case winds its way through the legal system, many of the same plaintiffs are asking the country's high court to immediately order Ugandan tabloids to stop publishing the names, photographs, and addresses of suspected homosexuals. Arrests, violent assaults, and evictions have followed such sensational front-page stories, and harassment and attacks against others perceived to be gay have mushroomed. But the filing of this week's lawsuit against the new anti-gay law signals that the epic culture war over LGBT rights in Uganda, as well as in several other African countries, is far from settled. Some of the source material for this report came from Political Research Associates and Mother Jones magazine. I'm Greg Gordon for This Way Out. And finally this week, with pen in hand, civil rights attorney and syndicated columnist Abby Dees does what we all wish we could do.
Dear 14-year-old me, as yet another year gets underway, I realize that I've owed you a letter for way too long. I know that you feel hopelessly awkward and out of sync with people, but you haven't been around long enough to know how well you're actually doing. You know how people keep saying, be yourself, and how they don't seem to give a damn when you do just that? Maybe they're hypocrites, but try not to take it personally. In time, you'll see that we all have hypocritical moments. The deal is, they're right, but they don't understand or tell you how difficult a task being yourself actually is. I can assure you, though, that the only way to get through what seems like an endless wait to grow up is to believe that you are indeed fabulous. I mean, don't be a self-centered jerk, but rather someone who appreciates her gifts and doesn't care about anyone else's vision of perfection. It's the only way to get to where you want to go. Yeah, it's hard. So what? You have to do it. You will do it. Along those lines, I cannot emphasize enough how much you should ignore the family's nattering on about your weight. You'll learn later on just how bonkers they are and how lovely you are. Instead of pinning all your life's hopes on being 20 pounds lighter, how about giving occasional props to your classically shaped, perfectly acceptable body? Spend that energy getting better at guitar, or reading, or picking your toes. Really, better use of your energy than starving. You won't be a rock star, I hate to tell you, but if you'll also stop believing that you're too fat to front a band, or make friends, or put yourself out there in front of people at all, you'll never regret taking those risks. Live now. Don't wait. And please give up trying to tan. You don't want to have to spend the rest of your life scanning for melanomas. Except that you have no melanin. Anyway, people will compliment your fair skin when it becomes fashionable in a few years. You will be loved and appreciated in your life for who you are, which is exactly the same person you are now, only with a lot more confidence, as well as a gentle acceptance of your flaws. That's how the be yourself thing pays off. You'll even have to find delicate ways to let people down who fall for you, which sucks. But I want to underscore the fact that you can stop worrying right now that you're destined to be alone. Did I mention that you were a lesbian? You knew that already, of course. You'll go out with boys just to make sure, and because you want to try to be normal, and because you're itching to experience everything. That's fine, I guess. Just don't expect much. The sooner you face your truth, then the sooner you can live your life fully with a big eating grin to boot. I should also give you a heads up that normal is wildly overrated. You'll discover this repeatedly. Take all those secrets and things that embarrass you and dump them in the trash. This includes any shame about being gay, your birthmark, everyone has them, or those rock star dreams. As soon as you speak things out loud and claim your quirks proudly, you transform vulnerability into strength. This is the definition of having balls, or ovaries. Understand that adults are more confused about life than they let on. As a result, they'll inevitably underestimate you. Listen to your gut about whether they're being straight up with you. If so, then pay attention. Ask their opinions, and then remember the ones who really look you in the eyes as they share them with you. Remember the ones who care what you have to say, especially if they take the time to challenge your ideas about things. In about 30 years, you'll want to send them a thank you letter for treating you with real respect. The future will arrive in due time, and it'll be worth all the struggle to get there. I promise. Love me.
This is Abby Deese, and this commentary was based on my syndicated column, Thinking Out Loud, distributed by Q Syndicate.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Johnny Torres, Michelle Marie Gilkison, and Abby Dees contributed program material. Thanks also to Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride. Anita Bryant, The Intruders, and Bob Marley performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Yavanna Foundation and by the generosity of our listeners. Log on to thiswayout.org to add your support, meet the crew, listen to podcasts, and more. Check out our blog, like us on Facebook, add us to your Google Plus circles, and look for us on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KKFI, Kansas City, Missouri, Tasman FM, Nubina, Tasmania, Dade City Community Radio, Dade City, Florida, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.